Good morning, everyone. I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and we'll begin by taking the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swedzinski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lippertz.
Present.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
And Representative Stevenson.
Present.
A quorum is present. I'd also like to note that it is Representative Lippert's birthday. So happy birthday to Representative Lippert. So we are—
Happy birthday.
We have the minutes from January 21st, 2021. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to look those over?
Yes, I have, and I would move approval.
Representative Akam moves approval of the minutes from January 21st, 2021. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are adopted. Only bill we have on the agenda today is the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act 2021, House File 164. Representative Stevenson, would you care to make a motion to your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move House File 164 to the General Register.
Representative Stevenson moves that House File 164 be placed on the General Register. And I understand that you have an author's amendment coded A5. Would you like to move that amendment at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the A5.
Representative Stevenson moves the A5 to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any comments you'd like to make to the A5?
Mr. Chair, I would just comment that it's largely a technical amendment. This is a bill that was introduced in the last biennium, and so this amendment largely changes, dates from 2021 to 2022 or 2022 to 2023, so on and so forth. It makes some other technical changes.
Any discussion to the A5? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Stevenson, welcome, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 164 is the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, or ECO. It modernizes and expands Minnesota's highly successful conservation improvement program, also known as SIP. SIP is one of the nation's leading energy conservation programs. And to date, the program has saved enough energy to power 100,000 homes annually. It's provided $6 billion in net benefits to Minnesotans, generated $11 billion in economic activity, and supports 45,000 local jobs in every corner of the state. But SIP hasn't been significantly updated since 2007, and the energy landscape in our state has changed very significantly in that time. This bill is a comprehensive refresh of the program based upon a broad agreement between stakeholders reached last year. In fact, returning members of the committee may remember that we heard this bill at the very end of the 2020 session, and it passed the full House in the closing days of that session, was scheduled for floor action in the Senate, but unfortunately we ran out of time. This year's bill is the same language, aside from those technical changes that you all just approved, as last year. And it's a big bill, but at a high level, it first expands SIP to allow for energy savings that can be realized through load management and fuel switching. Second, completes the transition from a program based on energy conservation spending to one based on actual energy savings. Third, it increases the conservation goal for our investor-owned utilities. Fourth, it doubles the support available to low-income customers of investor-owned utilities. And fifth and finally, it provides regulatory flexibility to our co-ops and munis. The other really significant aspect of this bill is the incredible coalition that supports it. It has the support of all of Minnesota's investor-owned utilities, Xcel, Minnesota Power, and Otter Tail Power, as well as our co-ops, munis, and G&Ts. Every single electric utility in the state supports this bill. It's also supported by the state's largest natural gas utility, CenterPoint Energy. It's supported by the clean energy community. It has the support of consumer advocacy groups, such as the Citizens Utility Board. It has the support of labor unions, such as IBEW Local 292. And it has the support of business groups, such as the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association and the National Electrical Contractors Association, as well as some leading members of our corporate community. In fact, even after that long list, I haven't listed everyone who supports the bill. Here in the legislature, it's a bipartisan bill. And I've really enjoyed working with my Senate counterpart, Senator Rarick, as well as my House partners on this bill, Representative Garofalo and Representative Eklund. In sum, this bill is a bill that will save consumers money and create jobs. I hope you'll support it. Mr. Chair, because it is complex, we do have a number of testifiers, but because of the complexity of the bill, I believe our very great House researcher, Bob Eliff, has a summary that he can give to the committee.
That would be very helpful, Mr. Eliff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Stevenson gave a good overview of the bill. This House File 164 modifies the statute that oversees the operation of the state's SIP program, which requires utilities to make cost-effective investments for their customers in order to attain an annual energy savings goal. The bill modifies the statute in two ways. As other bills do, it adds some language and takes and subtracts some as well, but it also reorganizes this section. And I want to focus on that first before getting to the new material, because the reorganization was not insignificant. This is the longest section in Chapter 216B, and I think explaining it will make the bill easier to read and to understand. As it currently stands, this section of law consists of 23 subdivisions that deal with separate issues and aspects of the Conservation Improvement Program. Some of them pertain to only one type of utility among the three that we have here, co-ops, munis, and IOUs. Some address two of those types, some address all three. If you're searching for a specific provision that applies to a specific utility type, this is not really a very reader-friendly bill. House File 164 reorganizes the statute by grouping provisions basically into two sections. Section 5 contains all the language regulating munis and co-ops, which are collectively referred to in the bill as consumer-owned utilities. And that consists of 10 subdivisions. The regulations governing munis and co-ops are identical for both groups in most cases. And finally, the balance of the bill consists of 13 additional sections that apply only to public utilities. So it makes things a little bit easier to find. And this reorganization is responsible for both the look of the bill and its length. You'll note that the first 15 pages of the bill are all underlined language, which usually indicates new language. But much of this language isn't new. A large portion of it simply replicates the language that's in the current statute, but removes all references to public utilities, so they apply only to municipals and co-ops. The sections that apply to the IOUs in the new bill is essentially the current statute denuded of all those references to munis and co-ops. So we've got those two parts of the bill with new language sprinkled throughout. And let me turn now to those new provisions of the bill. First, on pages 1 to 2 is section 2, which has nothing to do with SIP at all. It's a new program that allows public utilities to recover costs for investments in what are called innovative clean technologies, which are not widely used now in among Minnesota utilities. And a cap is set on the amount of that recovery, $6 million over any 3 years for Xcel Energy and $3 million over the same period for any other public utilities. Section 3 of the bill is also not really SIP related. It contains the state energy savings goals, which is increased from 1.5% a year here to 2.5% a year. It's really in Section 5 that the part of the bill that applies to consumer-owned utilities that deals with SIP. The annual required savings goals for consumer-owned utilities are unchanged from current law. It remains at 1.5% per year, at least 1% of which must come from traditional conservation measures, which are termed energy conservation improvements. And under current, as under current law, that 1.5% can be lowered by the Department of Commerce. But the bill does provide something new for consumer-owned utilities with respect to energy savings. Another source of energy savings that can be counted towards that 1.5%, savings from what is called efficient fuel switching improvements. This is when electricity or natural gas is substituted for a consumer's current fuel. And to qualify as efficient, fuel switching must meet four tests. It must reduce overall energy use on a BTU basis. It must reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It must be cost effective. And finally, it must improve the utility's load factor, which is a measurement of the utility's efficiency. Other changes for consumer-owned utilities in this section of the bill are that conservation plans must be submitted to the Public Utilities Commission for approval, not every year as they are now, but for periods up to 3 years. And finally, those energy savings goals do not have to be met every year, but they do have to be met on average from the duration of the plan. So it provides consumer-owned utilities with some flexibility with respect to that. There is also kind of a stick here. If the minimum 1% energy savings goal is not met for three consecutive years, and during that time, conservation spending was less than 1.5% for electric utilities and 0.5% of gross operating revenues for gas utilities, those spending levels then become mandatory until the goal is met for three consecutive years. As Representative Stevenson indicated, there are changes with respect to the amount of spending that consumer-owned utilities do for low-income households. It doubles from 0.1% of gross operating revenues to 0.2%. And also 15% of that amount can be spent on what are called pre-weatherization measures. These are things like repairing broken windows or leaky roofs, which prevent by law further conservation measures from being invested in those properties. And the Commissioner of Commerce has developed a list of approved pre-weatherization measures under this bill. Consumer-owned utilities can also contribute to the pre-weatherization spending by paying into a newly created account whose funds are to be used to remove asbestos insulation from homes. Now turning to public utilities, beginning with Section 6 of the bill, the energy savings goals for public utilities does change under this bill. For electric utilities, it increases from 1.5 to 1.75% a year. And for natural gas utilities, it is decreased from 1.5% to 1% each year. Another new provision of this bill is that for public utilities, their energy conservation plans must include activities to improve energy efficiency in public schools. That is something that is voluntary on the part of consumer-owned utilities, but under this bill, it's required for public utilities. The amount of spending for low-income households also increases for public utilities from electric utilities from 0.1 to 0.4% and from natural gas utilities from 0.4 to 0.8%. Fuel switching improvements also occur under for public utilities, but the energy savings from such fuel switching may not count towards a utility's energy savings goal. And the Public Utilities Commission is also prohibited from approving a financial incentive for fuel switching. Finally, Representative Stevenson mentioned loan management programs. These are programs that shift energy demand from times when energy is expensive to times when it is less expensive. For example, utility can place controls on residential water heaters that allow the utility to heat the water at night when rates are cheap rather than at peak daytime hours. Current law currently allows cost recovery of load management programs, This bill also allows a public utility to obtain a financial incentive from the PUC to encourage such investments if the commission finds that the program is in the interest of the utility's ratepayers. Mr. Chair, I think that concludes my summary at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Ela. Representative Stevenson, would you like to introduce your testifiers?
I would, Mr. Chair, and I want to just thank Mr. Elif, not just for that summary, but I think members of the committee know how great Mr. Elif is generally, but he has just gone above and beyond the call of duty on this bill, both last year and again in the last few days, preparing that technical amendment that we adopted at the beginning. So thank you very much, Bob. Really, really appreciate it. Mr. Chair, the first testifier for the bill is our temporary Commerce Commissioner, Grace Arnold.
Ms. Arnold, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Long and members. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. So as Representative Stevenson mentioned, for the record, my name is Grace Arnold and I'm the temporary commissioner for the Department of Commerce. I'll note that my time is limited today, so I also have with me Deputy Commissioner Aditya Renade and our Energy Regulation and Planning Manager, Jessica Burdett, so they'll be able to answer any questions for the department for the remainder of the committee. So I'd like to start by thanking all of the chief authors of the various versions of this bill that was first introduced in the 2019 session. So Chair Long, thank you. You were the original author in the 2019 and 2020 sessions. And this bill was originally in the governor's One Minnesota Path to Clean Energy Initiative. And so we're excited to continue that work. Representative Eklund, again, thank you for authoring the Muni and co-op version of this proposal. And then I'll say my final thanks to Representative Stevenson, who has done a lot of work to find compromise on all of these versions. So this bill is part of the governor's clean energy package, which was released last week. That's a package that we released in tandem with the DFL members of the House and Senate, and something I'm really proud to be a part of. As Representative Stevenson mentioned, this bill has a broad coalition of support, so I'd like to thank the many stakeholders who are involved in the process and coming to agreement for the monumental modernization of the Conservation Improvement Program at the Department of Commerce. It took a few years of work to get a seat here, but I'm excited about the outcome of this process, and I believe that we have the best bill to put in front of you today, which will help Minnesotans save energy and save money. So the energy conservation and optimization proposal will put money back in the pockets of Minnesota families and businesses by modernizing our conservation improvement program, which has made Minnesota a nationally recognized leader in energy efficiency. For every dollar invested in efficiency, Minnesotans receive a $3.75 return on that investment. We've also found that between 2013 and 2018, investments resulting from the conservation improvement program have generated over $11 billion in economic activity. The current proposal builds on the Conservation Improvement Program by allowing utilities to create new energy efficiency programs that address fuel efficiency and load management. So that we maximize savings for businesses and consumers, the Energy the ECO Act also increases Minnesota's energy efficiency goal from 1.5% to 1.75% for investor-owned and and maintains the goal of 1.5% for the co-ops and munis. Mr. Elif gave a really great summary, so I won't go into any more details of the bill. I'll say that many Minnesotans, particularly in greater Minnesota, face hard choices, paying the electric bill or paying rent. And this proposal dedicates more energy efficiency resources to low-income households so that Minnesotans can heat and cool their homes more efficiently and reduce their utility bills. It doubles the requirement for investor-owned utilities to provide energy efficiency measures to low-income households. And this could mean that an additional 2,000 homes in the state could benefit from weatherization improvements annually. This proposal will help Minnesota return to a strong energy economy with new jobs and business opportunities across the state. So I'll close again with thanking you, Chair Long, and members for having us here today. And myself or the team can answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Arnold. Representative Stevenson, would you like to introduce your next testifier?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Now we're going to go through some of the various members of the coalition in supporting of the bill. First is the CEO of Conexus Energy, the state's largest co-op and corporate or co-op constituent of my district, Greg Ritterbusch.
Mr. Ritterbusch, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Long and Representative Stevenson, and good morning to the members of the committee. As been introduced, I am CEO of Kinexus Energy. We're a consumer-owned cooperative serving about 138,000 accounts in the North Metro. Our service area includes all or portions of 7 counties, 12 state senators, and 20 representatives serve constituents that are Kinexus members. Our members seek reliable, safe, affordable electricity, and our democratically elected board of directors and staff have kept their rates flat now for 4 consecutive years. And in 2021, we reduced our rates for our business accounts by 2%. Many efforts contribute to our record, including Minnesota state leadership advancing environmental sustainability, new resources like wind, solar, and battery storage, and rebate programs effected under SIP. This morning, I wholeheartedly speak in favor of House Files 164, the ECO Act. This act builds upon the foundational success of Minnesota's SIP program. You might be interested in whether Minnesotans served by Kinexus are continuing to seek energy efficiency, and the answer would be yes, definitely. Continuing a long-term trend, in the last 5 years alone, our annual average residential use dropped from 9,200 to 8,900 kilowatt hours per year due to efficiency. Kinexus has been active operating SIP-approved programs in compliance or exceeding state objectives. And like all customer-owned utilities, we do not get or need performance incentives. Our sole objective is serving our members. So we all have different perspectives on current times. Few would argue that the energy mix, markets, technologies, and consumers are rapidly evolving. And we support building upon legacy SIP, but importantly, also evolving and modernizing Minnesota's leadership with flexibility, new options to be envisioned under ECO. There are only so many light bulbs and new efficient appliances that electric utilities can incent. We also support the accountable reporting focusing on ECO savings performance rather than managing by a legacy spending mandate. So ECO will increase customer choices by expanding SIP to load management and limited efficient fuel choice options, where we can offer consumers programs that incent efficiency, lower cost, lower carbon. Electric vehicle rates and charging solutions are a prime example. This bill will allow us the flexibility to help EV consumers, and that's an important thing right now, in so doing meet some of our ECO savings requirement. Before I conclude, let me describe a new program, a market-leading example of something that's not currently enabled under SIP, but would likely fit under ECO. Our market research determined recently strong member interest for new options to save. We created Peak Time Rebate Program. During months where demand pricing from our power supplier is extremely high, we message a day in advance to PTR subscribers and ask them to reduce use during targeted high-cost hours. Move the time you do laundry, bake a cake later, turn off some TVs, anything they wish or nothing at all, completely optional. Our systems calculate the difference in use between recent days and that PTR day where we need the savings. And we pay $1 per kilowatt hour, 7 times our retail rate for consumers that are able to save. Compare that to the SIP LED light bulb rebates that are lower impact to PTR, where consumers get paid for bona fide savings. If you're a bit wonky, this evolving practice is called behavioral demand response. The program is new in our state and region. Our leading 2020 saver, get this, got $162 in bill rebates during the 3 summer months last year. It saves demand, it saves energy, it reduces peak generated, which is commonly fossil-based. It improves load factor and saves grid costs. It pays the consumer for performance. But PTR does not qualify under SIP. It's something that we are doing for our consumers, and we'd like to expand the practice. So cooperatives across Minnesota are known for innovation, and this is just one example of the things that we would like to do that are conservation-related. We would share the practice and offer PTR for state programmatic review under the Department of Commerce under the ECO Act should it pass. So let me close by thanking Representative Stevenson as the bill author and this committee for an opportunity to share our support for House File 164. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ritterbush, and I just want to commend Conexus on your impressive leadership. A number of us got to visit the solar and battery installation that you have featured as your background, and appreciate your leadership on that and on energy efficiency as well. Representative Stevenson, would you like to take questions as we go, or should we go through the presenters and take questions at the end?
I defer entirely to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Swazinski, we'll go ahead for a quick question, but I do note that we have to get to some amendments later. So if we have lots of questions, I may push them towards the end. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would just be a question to the folks from Conexus. You know, obviously you guys support the bill. Would you not be able to do some of the things that you're currently doing if this bill did exist? Or, you know, obviously you have a democratically elected board. What limits you from doing this if this didn't exist as a statewide mandate?
So, Representative
Mr. Ritterbush.
Yeah, Representative, we are doing these things, and we're doing them for the reason of benefiting consumers. And our consumers tell us do things that are more sustainable and greener and try to save us money, just don't increase our costs. So we have had that direction from our board to management for years now. And so we are doing those things. In the current SIP program, we have been orienting towards load saving, demand saving things. So if there were not a SIP program at all in the state, we would continue doing things to benefit our consumers.
Representative Susan.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just a follow up, would you support, you know, let's say, I mean, this can be hypothetical or not, would you support other cooperatives if they chose not to participate in SIP? Do you think that should be within their rights?
Mr. Ritterbush.
So it's definitely a hypothetical, and I will use a line I have used in the past at this committee. You know, when you've met one co-op, you've met one co-op. So my peers out there all are finding different ways. If they're in agricultural areas, they're doing things unique there as opposed to more suburban co-ops, as opposed to co-ops up in the range. So I, out of respect for the leaders, both on this committee and in our industry, I won't try to guess what they would do. But the fact is, all of them are doing things along conservation programs, and it's unique and keyed to the specifics of their area.
Representative Swazinski, was that your questions? Sounds like. Okay, Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, the next testifier is Roger Wareheim of the Owatonna Public Utilities.
Mr. Wareheim, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stevenson's and members of the committee. I am Roger Wareheim, General Manager of Owatonna Public Utilities. OPU is one of the municipal utilities in the state that provides both electricity and natural gas. Our stated mission as a municipal utility is to enrich the quality of life in our community through our customer-focused services. We are not for profit, and so our goal is not to sell as much energy as we can. Our goal is to help our customers, even if this means that it reduces the amount of products we sell. In 2007, when our current SIP laws were put into place, I was our energy conservation officer here at OPU. And we, like many utilities in the state, actually embraced the SIP requirements as a way to fulfill our mission while strengthening our relationships with our customers. A phrase I've heard many times over the years related to SIP is low-hanging fruit. That is that idea that the easy things to get done in terms of energy conservation, the most economical things get done first, and then at some point it becomes harder and harder to meet your energy conservation goals that you have to meet each year. But we found that low-hanging fruit kept getting delayed because of primarily new technologies. For example, we helped many of our industrial and commercial customers convert their lighting from T12 fluorescent to T8 fluorescent, only to come back a few more years later and replace it with LEDs when that technology became affordable. New technologies, including those that we don't even know about yet because they haven't been developed, will continue to lead us to new energy conservation opportunities. And many of these technologies will run up against the long-standing prohibition against fuel switching. It's time to take a more global look at our goals. If we are concerned with putting less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, then it shouldn't matter if that carbon dioxide molecule is coming from a power plant or a tailpipe, as long as we are reducing it in the most economical way we can. Fuel switching is probably the most controversial part of this proposed legislation. However, it is also probably the most important aspects in terms of modernizing our approach so that we can continue to find additional ways to live our lives with a smaller impact on the environment. I do understand why the propane, oil, and gas industries may feel threatened by this legislation and have concerns that it will impact their sales and their profits. I know my representative did not support the bill last year because he felt it pitted electricity companies against the propane and oil interests. And certainly the individual interests are important, and those representing the utility side of things have been working with other industries to ease their concerns as best we can. Still, U.S. public policymakers have to consider what is best for society overall. As you may be aware, utility conservation programs must pass a number of cost-benefit tests. These have always included a societal test, and even within this particular legislation, there are parameters for tests that must be achieved in order for a measure to be used. So this bill is not going to create a free-for-all for electric utilities to gobble up market share from the transportation industry or the propane industry. As an electric utility, do we think electric cars are a good thing? Yes, we do. But that's not just because we think they will increase sales. Rather, we see it as a way to better utilize our assets and thus provide better value to our customers. By charging electric vehicles off-peak, we are using capacity that is otherwise underutilized. And with more and more of this capacity coming from carbon-free or low-carbon sources, it reduces CO2 emissions in the transportation sector. And this is a win-win-win. So for that reason, OPU, along with MMUA and other municipal utilities, are in favor of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Wareheim. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, now that we've heard from a co-op and a muni, I think it's a good time to hear from an IOU. Our next testifier is Tina Kegger from Minnesota Power.
Ms. Kegger, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Tina Kegger, the Manager of Customer Experience Operations at Minnesota Power. We're an investor-owned electric utility operating in a 26,000-square-mile service territory in beautiful northeastern Minnesota, where we serve 145,000 customers. I've been directly involved in SIP, which you've been hearing about today, since 2007, and I can attest to the importance of allowing for conservation or comprehensive program offerings so that we can effectively deliver on our customer expectations for safe, reliable, and affordable energy. Our 2019 program results marked a decade of Minnesota Power exceeding the state energy conservation goal of 1.5%, all while maintaining the lowest average residential rates in the state and delivering nearly 80% of our energy savings with our business customers. We are the first Minnesota utility to deliver 50% renewable energy to our customers, and we view energy efficiency, load management, and beneficial electrification as important elements and providing essential services to our communities, homes, and businesses, both in the midst of energy transition and as we navigate through a pandemic reality and the related economic impacts together. Today, I speak in favor of the ECO Act. It builds on the strong foundation, which you've been hearing about today, that's established in SIP, while updating statute to better align with today's technologies and customer expectations, which is really foundational to all of these programs. This includes the potential to expand program offerings that consider not only energy consumption, but the timing of that consumption and how it aligns with an increasingly renewable energy mix. The ECO Act balances policy objectives with low-income needs and continues to spur technology innovation while also providing for a regulatory framework that ensures protections and flexibility. And most importantly, it does so through a fuel neutral analysis. These criteria were described in detail in the introduction and are in lines 30.16 to 30.27. If a current fuel source is deemed cleaner or cheaper, then these criteria will bear that out. It's actually the current policy, which lacks a fuel neutral approach within the SIP framework, that creates winners and losers among our customers today. In our view, advances with technologies for all fuel types are something we would anticipate customers will consider when making their unique investment decisions. This proposal is not in conflict with classic conservation and energy efficiency offerings, which will continue to be offered to customers to ensure this vital component of the program remains a bedrock. In closing, as Minnesota strives to address evolving priorities such as decarbonization, cost, equity, and grid value, our policymakers need to adjust targets to incorporate multiple goals, such as fuel neutral savings.
Thank you,
Ms. Better align energy. Oh, sorry, I was not quite done. I just paused. That better align with efficiency programs, electrification, and greenhouse gas reductions. Minnesota, as you've heard today, has a rich history of strong efficiency programs and policies, placing us in the top 10 on the ACEEE scorecard for 13 of the last 14 years. That speaks to the national benchmarking that we were talking about earlier. And you've certainly heard or read about the tremendous benefits of SIP, including job creation, cost savings, and carbon emissions. The ECO Act seeks to build on that success with important adjustments to align with those multiple policy objectives, and that to that end, it has our support. Thank you to Representative Stevenson as bill author, this committee, and the many supporters who have thoughtfully collaborated on the ECO Act, House File 164. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Kager. Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, the committee's heard from the agency that administers the program and the representatives of the utilities that participate in the program. I think it's good for the committee to hear the consumer perspective now. And so I'm pleased that our next testifier is Annie Levinson-Falk of the Citizens Utility Board.
Ms. Levinson-Falk, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota, or CUB. CUB is a nonprofit advocate for Minnesota's energy consumers. We work directly with people across the state to help them avoid utility shutoffs, save money on their bills, and navigate complicated utility rules, regulations, and policies. And at the legislature, we support proposals that will help improve affordability of utility service and reduce its environmental impacts. And this bill will do both. CUB staff frequently refers people to their utilities energy conservation programs in order to reduce their bills on a permanent basis. The ECO Act will help ensure people can continue to take advantage of such savings opportunities as the energy world modernizes. The bill increases the amount that utilities must spend to help low-income households conserve energy. This is especially important as low-income households see the most meaningful benefits from reducing their energy costs. The bill would also allow a portion of those funds to be spent on pre-weatherization measures like remediating vermiculite insulation or updating old wiring, which prevent improvements from being made in a lot of low-income families' homes today. Allowing load management programs to be offered alongside traditional conservation measures can save customers a lot of money as well, because it can reduce costs enormously when a utility can shave its electricity demand peak. And the fuel neutral approach, so utilities can provide conservation incentives to help a customer save energy, even if they do so by using a different fuel. That'll help many Minnesotans, particularly folks in rural areas who can save over the long term by replacing, for example, their traditional central air conditioner with an air source heat pump. I respectfully disagree with others who claim that the fuel switching measures will increase costs. Fuel switching will only be allowed under ECO when it's more efficient, less polluting, and saves money, cases in which it absolutely makes sense for a consumer to switch. And the cost to consumers is one of the primary considerations, and this is one of the reasons that CUB supports this bill so strongly. As has been mentioned, the bill increases the energy savings target for investor-owned electric utilities from 1.5% to 1.75% per year, as long as it remains cost-effective to do so. And I'd also like to address one concern that I've heard with respect to those savings targets, which is that the conservation programs will eventually drive utilities out of business. That's not the case, which I think is probably clear from the utility support that you've already heard. But the conservation law doesn't mean that utility sales have to go down. What it does is ask the utility to reduce its sales slightly compared with what sales would have otherwise been without those conservation measures. Utility sales have been increasing over the years that Minnesota's conservation improvement policy has been in place, and all signs indicate that electricity sales are going to continue to go up. This policy allows sales to grow and to do so efficiently so that consumers aren't paying more than they need to. Conservation programs have saved Minnesota consumers billions of dollars. The ECO Act will help bring these programs up to date with today's energy systems so that they remain meaningful for consumers in the years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Levinson-Flock. Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I only have one testifier left, and I couldn't ask for a better cleanup hitter than Mike Bull of the Center for Energy and the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Stevenson. My name is Mike Bull. I'm the policy director for the Center for Energy and Environment, a clean energy nonprofit headquartered in Minnesota. We've been the state's leading voice on energy efficiency for over 40 years, with experience and expertise delivering efficiency programs to utility customers, conducting research on efficient technologies, providing low-cost financing for the installation of efficiency measures and distributed solar, and advocating for policies that have made Minnesota a national leader on energy efficiency. We've been working on this bill for quite some time now, and we appreciate the committee's time and attention on it. I just want to underscore a couple of points. You know, I think you've heard from everyone why this is a terrific bill. I just want to underscore a couple points that maybe haven't quite fully been made. One is that in addition to the significant bill savings that and economic activity that SIP and ECO will drive, that projects supported by ECO and SIP are inherently local jobs in electrical upgrades and the installation of heating and cooling technologies, insulation, ventilation equipment. These types of projects are typically designed and carried out by local businesses and installed by licensed local contractors, which is why SIP and then ECO supports over 47,000 local jobs in every corner of the state. And then the other point I want to come back to is one that Representative Stevenson made, is the importance of the broad coalition of interest supporting ECO. It just can't be understated. ECO is the result of painstaking negotiations among multiple competing interests: regulators, utilities of all sizes and types, consumer groups, contractors, efficiency advocates, labor groups, and others. And over the course of that negotiation, a rare thing happened. This ECO bill reflects the highest common denominator among those competing interests rather than the lowest, which is often the case in legislative negotiations. I want to thank all of the folks we've worked with on this bill to negotiate this highest common denominator bill, especially the department who's done such a great job in leading the conversation, and the electric co-ops and munis that really leaned in to find the result that works best for them. I call them out in particular, but everybody has been really great to work with. ECO advances the public interest in energy efficiency in multiple dimensions: real bill savings for customers, local economic activity, significant avoided greenhouse gas emissions, and I urge you to vote yes on it today. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm happy to stand for any questions you might have.
Did we lose Chair Long? There he is.
I'm on my phone. I apologize. My internet connection has gone out. Representative Stevenson, I believe those are your testifiers.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Are there questions for the testifiers or for the bill author? I'm not seeing any on my phone, so we will. Representative Micklin.
I apologize. I'm trying to find my hand button, but I couldn't find it fast enough before you moved on. I do have a question, probably for the bill author or maybe one of the representatives from the utility companies. On page 2, line 8, it talks about an investment for anybody, you know, utility of more than $200,000 of not more than $6 million over three consecutive years. Oh, you just did a 180 there, sorry. And a smaller one up to $3 million. But what would prevent a utility from spending $6 million in year one, skipping year two, and then coming back around in year three and spending another $6 million because they weren't in consecutive years? That's my question I currently have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know that the exact example that Representative Mecklen pointed out is possible, because it says over any three consecutive years, a limit of $6 million. So my read of that would be that you get $6 million over the course of 3 years. I suppose you could do $6 million in year one, zero in year two or three, and $6 million again in year four, but you couldn't do $6 million year one, zero in two, and $6 million year three. You know, the decision of how to allocate those $6 million would be up to the utility. If they want to stack them in 1 year, that I suppose is their prerogative. It makes the business sense to them. And I don't know if Mr. Bull has anything that he would add to that.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, Representative Stevenson's reading of the provision that Representative Mecklen referenced is my reading of that as well, is that it's the $6 million is bounded by those 3 years. It doesn't have to be spent consecutive, but it can't be more than $6 million in any three-year period.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mecklen.
And I understand both of your points. However, the fact that it says any three consecutive years, which means if you spend $6 million in year one, you spend nothing in year two, those 3 years consecutively start over on year two or year three, however you want to look at it, because it then carries forward. I mean, perhaps it should be written a little cleaner, but that was my interpretation of it. I've heard it from others as well. So just my 2 cents worth. But thank you for your clarification.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I've gotten quite a few letters from people who are opposed to it. One, my local district, the Blanco Co-op Association, and they use the word vehement opposition. Now, it would have been nice to have a couple of testifiers from the chamber and also those who oppose, so we could have a balanced approach, but that at this point, it's probably a little bit late. But they-
Representative Grunhagen, we'll be taking public testimony in a minute. We're just doing questions for the bill author and for his testifiers.
All right. Well, then, you know, I just personally, I don't like government picking winners and losers. They tend to get in the way of technology and the marketplace, and in the end, create less efficiency and more higher costs for the consumer. In fact, since this alternative energy has been in place, my electricity rates have gone up exponentially. So we could talk about savings, but that's not the reality of what I see between my business farms and otherwise. But here is one of the letters I received, and I'd like one of the testifiers to respond. He sent me a whole list. I'll just pick a couple. He says the EPA gives electricity a source site of 2.8 and a propane a ratio of 1.01. This means propane is almost three times more efficient than what's being proposed. And they go on to say this will increase the cost of energy for Minnesota's and rural districts, which is what we have seen in the past through ratepayer increases. I understand some of the goals in the bill, but if you'd respond to that about the, I know somebody, one of the testifiers denied there's going to be a rate increase, but it looks like it's one of the major concerns for the people I'm hearing from, and also the efficiency of propane. It's much more efficient in terms of generating you know, whatever requirement there is compared to the alternative, even according to the EPA.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, first, I just want to make an observation that you were talking about rate increases. And one thing that's always important in this committee to understand is the difference between rates and bills. And just because your rate might be going up, if you're consuming less electricity, your bill might go down. And so that's just an important lens, not just for this bill, but for a lot of legislation that we consider in this committee, to understand, to keep in mind that there's a pretty profound difference between rates and bills. Representative Grunhagen, your comment was about how you don't like bills that pick winners and losers. Well, then you should love this bill, because it doesn't pick winners and losers at all. It provides additional flexibility to co-ops and sets a few fuel-neutral criteria based on efficiency and cost to judge the projects that would be considered under the bill. So if your constituent who wrote to you is correct, that propane is the more efficient, more economical fuel source, then a switch from propane would not be permitted under this bill. The bill does not pick winners and losers. There's no evidence that rates will go up. And I hope in light of that, that I've earned your support.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate the response. However, you know, I was told so many times before that all these alternatives are going to be more efficient, more cost efficient, everything else. And the opposite is just true. It is seems to be true. So, I mean, I got a hard time swallowing some of this stuff. Because of the past experience on the alternatives. And it, you know, it's just gone right across the board. And also in terms of let them, you know, we had testimony from the last committee that the marketplace has done more to reduce CO2, has done more to reduce CO2 in Minnesota than any of these laws. And again, government just gets in the way so often, I think. So I respectfully disagree with some of those so-called conclusions because of past experience of what we've actually seen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question to the bill author, Representative Stevenson. Does Section 2 of the Innovative Clean Technologies, would that section allow for electric vehicle rebates?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, I don't believe so, but I am going to punt actually to Mr. Bull. I think that if you, before I do, I'm going to, at the risk of making a fool of myself, I think that if you look at the beginning, it talks about definitions for innovative clean technology, talks about technology that's not widely deployed in the utility industry, and I'm not sure if EVs would qualify for that, but I'll ask Mr. Bull to comment.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson and Representative Franzen, and that's my read as well. It's not intended for that kind of purpose. It's like, it's more intended as the one of the examples that we've heard from one of the utilities is that it would be for it's called a hydrolyzer. They're interested in figuring out how to turn electricity into hydrogen that could be used in multiple ways to replace, for example, the use of natural gas on a system. So it's or the idea behind this section is the innovation to and deployment of new technologies that not EVs. To see if there are ways to that could be beneficial to customers as well as cleaner to the system.
Representative Franzen.
Follow-up question. Would it allow for installing stations or charging stations to be put in homes, garages?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, I kind of give the same answer. I don't believe so. Again, if you look at line 1.17, one of the criteria under that section is it has to be not widely deployed by the utility industry, and I don't think EV charging equipment qualify.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How would you define then wildly deployed? So electric vehicle rebates are not currently widely deployed by utilities. So would that not qualify? And if not, by your definition, is it possible to the bill author that we strengthen the language in this bill before it hits or when it hits the floor?
Representative Stevenson, and then we'll have to go to public testimony. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, well, a rebate isn't technology, so I'm not sure a rebate, but the question is where the technology is widely deployed. Admittedly, that's not, you know, down to the T specific, the standard of widely deployed, but that's why we have a Public Utilities Commission to interpret and apply these rules. As to your question about whether the language could be strengthened, I'm certainly open to suggestion, would be happy to work with you on that between now and when the bill hits the floor.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
So we had one member of the public sign up for testimony, and that is Mr. Dave Wager. Mr. Wager, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I am Dave Wager. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Propane Association. And I'm here in support of all of our members to oppose this legislation. This is an anti-propane marketplace disruptor designed to prefer one industry over another. In addition to the fact that the state should not be interfering with commerce and picking winners, we strongly oppose fuel switching from propane to electricity. It would increase the use of fossil fuels and greenhouse gas emissions because approximately 75% of Minnesota electricity is produced from non-renewables, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. It would increase the electrical load on the grid greater than the amount of electricity that's trying to be produced by renewables. It's going to increase the cost of energy for rural Minnesota, as Representative Grunhagen already referred to. That's also going to increase ratepayer charges. Rural Minnesota has a great need for energy choice and diversity to ensure the reliable and affordable energy that they need. Propane provides this and also reduces energy consumption and emissions. As earlier referred to, the EPA gives electricity site source ratio of 2.8 and propane 1.01. Again, propane is almost three times more efficient. Some other things that haven't been discussed that surely should be at some point. According to Mark Mills at the Manhattan Institute, a single electric car battery weighs about 1,000 pounds. Manufacturing this car battery requires mining in over 50,000 pounds of raw materials. According to the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, reserves of the raw materials for batteries are highly concentrated in a few countries. Nearly 50% of the cobalt reserves are in the Dominican Republic of the Congo. 58% of lithium reserves are in Chile. 80% of natural graphite reserves are in China, Brazil, and Turkey, while 75% of manganese reserves are in Australia, South Africa, and the Ukraine. According to UNICEF, up to 40,000 children work in mines in the Dominican Republic of the Congo in extremely dangerous conditions. In Chile, lithium mines in the Salar de Atama region use 65% of the water in that region where the mining is taking place, which is already one of the driest deserts in the world. So we're looking at groundwater depletion and pollution, environmental degradation, landscape damage, and soil contamination are all caused by mining needed materials. According to the Department of Energy, they recently released a report on home energy sources. They forecast a representative average energy cost of five residential energy sources, including electricity, natural gas, heating oil, propane, and kerosene. They found that electricity to be the highest cost of energy for households. The energy cost of propane was $18.81 per million BTUs. Less than half of that of electricity, which they have at $38.28 per million BTUs. And also according to the Department of Energy, propane isn't just more efficient and affordable than electricity, it's also cleaner. propane produces 43% fewer greenhouse gas emissions than using the equivalent amount of electricity generated from the grid. In closing, this legislation lacks clear goals and definitions and drastically favor an increased consumption program for electric utilities, disproportionately harming low-income consumers and harming Minnesota's rural economy. On behalf of all the members of our association, I ask that you oppose HF 164. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wager. Looks like we have one question for you, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is of Mr. Wager here, and it kind of goes along with what you're already talking about. I represent District 5B, which makes up Itasca and Cass County. So you cannot drive down any county road without seeing a propane tank or a fuel oil tank in someone's yard. And that is because of reliability, right? So my question for you would be, could you talk more about how, you know, we transition to more of electrifying the heating sources in our rural state? How can we count on that being reliable, I guess, especially we've had a very mild winter. I know of people that are already trying to heat their homes in my district with electric baseboard heat and such and have electric bills that are north of $600 and $700 already. So my question to you would be, could you just expand more on the reliability that propane and fuel oils offer rural Minnesotans?
Mr. Wager.
Propane is an extremely reliable source of energy. It has been proven time and time again. I'll refer back to just a couple of years ago during the polar vortex. Princeton, which is just a few miles up the road from where I'm sitting now, had natural gas shortages. They were forced to leave their homes. Their homes were left to try and find a way to keep them from freezing while they stayed in hotels. Electric windmills weren't running because it was so cold, and were using alternative sources of energy to keep them from freezing. Solar panels were covered with snow. The natural gas industry had to curtail a lot of their distribution and put a lot of their off-peak loads on standby, which was propane. So not only did propane take care of all the regular consumers, we also assisted the natural gas industry in taking care of their consumers. We did all of that without missing a beat.
Representative Igo, did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you very, very much, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Wager.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a couple comments relative to the testimony of Mr. Wager and the question of Representative Igo. First, I just wanted to reiterate very strongly that the bill only allows fuel switching if it is more efficient and cost effective. So if Mr. Wager's testimony about propane is correct, if you believe that, then the switch won't be allowed under the rules. Secondly, I just want to say that I very much, and I know other members of the committee also can have concern about having local jobs and having a lot of the renewable energy economy occurring in Minnesota. I'm carrying a bill, Clean Energy First, that has a lot of language about ensuring that the next generation of electrical utility infrastructure is built in Minnesota. And I know Representative Lislegaard, this is his passion to work on. So there's a lot of concern about that in this committee, and I'm sure as we go along, there'll be more work on that. But the last thing I just wanted to point out to Representative Igo's point about the reliability of this and people in his district, let's just be clear. No one's forced to make a fuel switch here. If you're a customer and you're really happy with your propane and you're concerned that if you go on electrical, you're going to have less reliable service, or you're going to have your bills go up, you don't have to switch fuels. This is the only people who are going to switch fuels are the customers who choose to do so. There's no mandate of fuel switching here.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Swazinski. And then we're going to have to go to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general question. So earlier in testimony, it was said that this is kind of neutral. It's not pitting one group against the other. Are propane sellers able to incentivize folks from switching from electric to propane or gas in this bill?
Is that a question for the author, Representative Stevenson?
Well, I can answer it, Mr. Chair, I think. Again, I might ask Ms. Verdette to comment from the Department of Commerce, but I think the answer is propane is not a regulated utility the same way that electric utilities are. A propane company can offer whatever rebates and discounts that they want to under existing law, but I don't know if Ms. Verdette or Mr. Bull would have a different answer.
Ms. Verdette.
Chair Long, Representative Stevenson, that would be my exact answer as well. They're not regulated and they can incentivize customers to switch fuels if they so choose to do so.
Representative Franson, if it's a very short question, I can allow it, but we have four amendments we have to get to before we wrap. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging my short question. So I hear a lot about efficient and cost effective. Who determines what is efficient? Who determines what is cost effective?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franson, very briefly, a lot of that is spelled out in the bill. If you take a look at subdivision 11, section 17, subdivision 11, this is pages 29, 30, and onward, it talks about the criteria there. Ultimately, it's the commission that would make a determination. Oh, Jessica Burdett's saying I'm wrong.
Ms. Burdett.
Everything up until the commission makes a determination. It's actually the Department of Commerce that has jurisdiction over SIP programming and makes the final decisions around programs, cost effectiveness, et cetera.
See, when I speak before Ms. Burdett or Mr. Bull, I make a fool of myself invariably. I got away with it for most of the hearing, but caught up to me.
All right. Well, thank you, members, and thank you for our public testifier, Mr. Wager. So we are on to amendments. We've had four amendments that have been filed, and our first is the amendment coded A7. I believe that is your amendment, Representative Bull.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you care to move your amendment?
Yes, I would like to move Amendment 7.
Representative Bowe moves the A7. Representative Bowe, please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the author, Representative Stevenson. I'd like to move this. I believe it's a friendly amendment. This amendment seeks to make just a few small changes in Section 14 of the bill, the Efficient Lighting Program. And Amendment 7 seeks to allow utilities to also collect LEDs if they would so choose. It seeks to provide all collection programs with protection from non-federal hazardous waste rules if the materials collected are properly managed. And it seeks to include fluorescent and HID as well as LED in any SIP spending that occurs.
A discussion of the amendment, Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowe, I'd ask members of the committee to oppose the amendment at this time. You know, this is a bill where all of the everyone who's involved with it has agreed to keep it clean and to not support any amendments that aren't adopted by, agreed to by all of the stakeholders. And we're not there on this amendment. Happy to talk to Representative Bowe about it between now and when the bill hits the floor.
Other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bowe, any further comments?
No, I was going to have a little bit more in this just to make sure that we were not losing the ability to seek reimbursement by local government units that are involved in collection. With fluorescent and HID, it wasn't clearly spelled out, but I think by using the term spent bulbs, that should not be an issue. So I would just ask for a yes vote. I think that, you know, making sure that fluorescents and HID are allowed in SIP spending and allowing utilities to collect LEDs if they so choose, which kind of is not allowed without this amendment. I would encourage a yes vote, but I will certainly look forward to talking with the author further as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bowe. All in favor of the A7 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
No. The noes have it. The amendment is not adopted. We next have an amendment coded A1. Who would like to offer the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Swazinski would like to offer that amendment, and I move the A1 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A1. Representative Swazinski, please tell us about your amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is pretty straightforward. I think some of the indigestion that I would say is pretty prevalent is whenever we try to move goals. We've heard from a lot of the utilities saying, well, we've already reaching this. We're a lot of doing these on our own. But there's a big difference between, you know, when you set a goal, oftentimes it's going to be turning into a mandate. And I'm exceptionally concerned about that and what that's going to potentially mean. You know, obviously, we don't want to tie the hand of future legislatures, but we also don't want to tie the hand of business going out in the future. And so when we set goals like this, it sounds fun and soft and cozy, but sooner or later, someone's going to come along and enforce this issue. And sometimes it's not going to work as well for some, and some it works just fine. But this simply just, I think, you know, softens the language of the bill in a way that it makes it a bit more palatable for those across the line. And I would just ask folks to really consider this as a friendly amendment to the bill, and I'd ask for a roll call. It moves the efficiency goal from 2.5 to back to 1.5%.
Representative Swazinski has asked for a roll call. Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, am I unmuted? Yes, I am. Mr. Chair, I would ask members to oppose this amendment. The goal in question, which is just a goal, has been in place since at least 2007, could be before, and hasn't turned into a mandate. It reflects the state's desire to cumulatively reduce energy use. It doesn't fall just on our electric and gas utilities, and I think it's good to move it up to 2.5%, so I would ask members to oppose it.
I don't see further discussion to the amendment. The roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Yes.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
No.
Representative Mecklen.
Yes.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There were 7 votes in favor and 10 votes against. The amendment fails and is not adopted. Next, we have the A2 amendment. Is there somebody who would like to move the A2?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Rep. Swazinski moves the A2 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A2. Please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This amendment is also kind of along the same lines. You know, in the bill, we see an increase from 1.5 to 1.75% for the SIP mandate. This kind of closely resembles the first amendment. This would simply, I think, massage the bill, I think, to make it a bit more palatable to folks. I know we've heard from utilities that say, you know, hey, we're already surpassing 1.5, sometimes higher. It's difficult. But I think it's wise. I mean, I would have soon allow these businesses to potentially have, you know, allow them to chart their own course. If it's 3, let them do 3. But if it's 0, let them do 0. I think we have some opportunity here to not force these costs potentially onto their customers. And, you know, I feel that this bill would be much better served to get rid of the mandates. And to at least minimize the amount of mandates that's in it. And so I would ask for a roll call on the A2 amendment.
Roll call has been requested. Discussion to the A2 amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask members of the committee to vote no on this amendment. Energy conservation saves consumers money, and all of the IUs have made clear that they will not be increasing rates as a result of this legislation. I'd also note the bill moves the target from 1.5% to 1.75%. In 2018, the actual energy savings which is the most recent year that I have data for, the Xcel's number was 2.35, Minnesota Power was 2.6, and Otter Tail was at 4.21. So this is about moving up the floor. I think it's a very modest step forward in light of what our IUUs are able to do.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll and the chair votes no.
Vice Chair Akam.
No.
Minority Leader Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Bowe.
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Franson.
Franson votes yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lippert.
No.
Representative Lislegard.
No.
Representative Meckland.
Yes.
Representative Munson.
Sorry, aye.
Representative Stevenson.
No.
There being 7 votes in favor and 10 votes opposed, the amendment is not agreed to and not adopted. We have one final amendment, the A3 amendment. Who would like to move the A3?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's mine as well.
Representative Swazinski.
I move the A3 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A3 amendment. Representative Swazinski.
Yeah, so this amendment, I really think, really puts the focus on the cost effectiveness as those things are considered from the perspective of the ratepayers. I think we all understand that these bills, we do have some ratepayer subsidization across the market. And the reason for that is because of higher electrical rates. And, you know, it's, you know, those things are moved around and so that everyone else pays more. I think we should be, as we're looking at this, what is the real perspective? And, you know, we keep hearing that this will save ratepayers money, but people's bills continue to get higher and they use less electricity. So I think we should be writing into this. That's not what this amendment potentially does, but it does address the fact that people's electrical bills are going up and the bill should mandate that they go down or at least stay the same if we're told that this saves costs. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask members to oppose this amendment. I'm a little puzzled. Representative Swazinski said he thinks the focus should be on cost effectiveness, but this amendment actually gets rid of the cost effectiveness test in the bill. So that's reason enough to oppose it from my standpoint. The test that it would put into place includes variables that I'm not sure we should be focusing on, including lost utility revenue, which from a consumer perspective, I'm not sure is beneficial. I think the existing language is best. I think it focuses on cost savings. And I just remind members of the committee that energy conservation saves consumers money.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 The noes have it and the amendment is not adopted. Those are the amendments that were filed before the committee. And so we'll take closing comments on the bill. Is there any closing remarks or discussion for the bill before we turn to the author?
That's amended.
Seeing none, Representative Stevenson, your closing comments.
Sir,
Representative Franson.
Yeah, actually, I do have some questions, if you don't mind. Sorry, I cannot figure out how to do the raise hand. So I have a few questions if the bill author would indulge.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you. So my first question, what is the bill's limit on how much a utility could charge its customers for fuel switching programs?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, fuel switching programs in order to qualify under the bill have to be cost efficient, they have to save money, and they have to be more efficient. Fuel switching programs under the bill don't count towards the savings goal for investor-owned utilities, which I think was what your question related to. Investor-owned utilities are permitted to engage in fuel switching, but it doesn't count towards their goal. So those are the bounds of the bill, unless I'm missing something. And I don't know, I saw Mr. Bull nod, and I can't tell if he was nodding because I'm not missing anything or because I am missing something. So I'll let Mr. Bull see if there's something that I'm missing.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, Representative Stevenson, you're not missing anything. It's the oversight, it's the technical criteria that's listed in the bill for efficient fuel switching. They have to meet those. They have to show to the department that those technical criteria are met. That's, and that especially the cost effectiveness, that's the bound on that.
Representative Franzen?
Right, but the Department of Commerce then makes that decision, right? So what is the limit on how much money can be recovered from ratepayers for fuel switching?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, the fuel switch has to be cost effective. It has to save consumers money.
Representative Franzen.
I just don't feel like I'm getting the answer. So if I were to switch, if I were to do the fuel switching myself, right, how much, is there a limit on how much my bill could go up? Or any, let's just think about the middle class person, right? How much would their bill technically go up?
Representative Stevenson, and this will have to be our last question before we go to our vote.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Franzen, and I'm happy to talk further with you about this, and I'm sure Ms. Burdett or Mr. Bull would also be happy to talk to you further about this. But the again, the bill has to save, the switch has to save money. It has to be cost effective.
Thank you for your questions, Representative Franzen. Representative Stevenson, did you have closing comments you would like to make to your bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we've had a great discussion of the bill. I'll just say it's a good bill. You should vote for it because energy efficiency saves money and creates jobs.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And I will just add that this bill has, as has been said, been a long time in the works from a really wide range of stakeholders. And energy policy is often a very contentious area with lots of different points of view, but I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find as broad a coalition in support of energy legislation as you have behind this bill. And I just want to thank the many stakeholders who have spent many, many hours working towards agreement on this legislation. It's a good piece of legislation that I think will provide some needed flexibility and help advance our energy efficiency goals as a state. Representative Stevenson, would you like to renew your motion?
Chair, I renew my motion to move House File 164 to the General Register.
Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 164, as amended, be placed on the General Register. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Akam.
Aye.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bow.
No.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
No.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lippertz.
Aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Aye.
Representative Meckland.
No.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is passed. Congratulations, Representative Stevenson. We have a couple of quick announcements for members. There are two opportunities for members of this committee to participate in other committees this week, and our committee administrator has sent those out. Tomorrow, the Preventive Health Committee is having a hearing specifically focused on the health impacts of climate change, and all members of this committee are welcome to join if you're not already a member of that committee. And then on Friday, Chair Lee and myself are jointly hosting a hearing between the Climate and Energy Committee and the Capital Investment Committee. Chair Lee, would you like to give us a preview of that hearing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on Friday, we'll be having an expert from the University of Minnesota come and talk about the impact of climate into our infrastructure. And so we'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair, and I encourage all members to attend on Friday.
So hopefully we will have a good turnout for our hearing on Friday, and appreciate that it's not one of our normal hearing times, but this is, I think, a unique opportunity to hear from some terrific testifiers on issues that are relevant to our committee. And is there anything else from members before we adjourn? Seeing nothing, then thank you all very much. Our next meeting is Thursday, January 28th at 10:30 a.m., and this remote meeting is adjourned.